in blue. Okie doke move and lays it up for two. Lee with a nifty move there.
He could go all the way, and the freshman takes it to the house with no time on the clock. Are you kidding me? He takes it 60 yards. Welcome to Redbird Nation.
And the shoe. She gives it to Katie Broadway. Broadway taking it herself down the left side. No good. But she's going to get her own rebound. Kicks it out. Candy Sykes for three. No, that's good.
She got it.
Candy Sykes for three.
From local high school action to the birds and the pros, with live interviews, reporting, debate, and discussion, WDND's Red Zone brings you all the sports you can handle each week. The Red Zone starts now, only on 103.3 WDND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.
Sometimes the world's going another way, but people are going the other. One thing that will stay the same is we will be here every Thursday night talking sports. This is The Red Zone. I'm Leo Stotter, your sports director here at WZND. I'm joined by my assistant sports director, Joey Dwyer. He came to us from the cornfields of Iowa and is looking to play catch.
Hey, all I'm saying is, if you boys want tickets to the Field of Dreams game, I'm going. That's like an hour from my house.
Huge.
We can crash at the Dwyer homestead.
If you build it, they will come. And I'm also joined by our producer, not mine. We don't own him.
He is
our producer,
you wish.
Joe Kennedy. He is the humble beast. He is pressing the buttons here and making this show on the road.
Yep.
Guys, it's been a pretty crazy week for Redbird Athletics, I think. Obviously, the biggest story, the most unexpected story. I mean, it really wasn't unexpected, because if you go back and listen to our show this week, we were talking about the underlying problems of a spring football season.
Mm-hmm.
But let's get on with it anyway. The Illinois State football team, as you all know, opted out of the remainder of their spring season due to a depleted roster and, you know, just injuries across the board at several key positions. This was something. They are the second team in the Valley to opt out. Indiana State opted out at the start of the season. We opted out mid-season. What are your guys' early thoughts on this whole situation?
Well, I want to say one thing, too. Coach Spack did talk to Indiana State's coach
before
the season. He was saying in the press conference, like, he's been talking to coaches. He's been even talking...
That doesn't surprise me, because, like we heard, he wasn't a fan of the eight-game season.
Oh,
he thought it was too much.
Yeah, he's even been talking to Big Ten coaches, and they've been saying that they're so happy they didn't do their spring season, because now they can see these injuries adding up. Yeah, they said it in the press conference a little, and we'll play a couple of pieces from that press conference, too, but... He's been talking to a lot of coaches and the Indiana State coach, how they were saying he didn't want to do it at the beginning of the season. He wanted to come into the season playing like he tried.
Definitely.
But it's always been in the back of their minds.
And I just don't understand what the point of going into the season and opting out halfway is. If you're already having these concerns, and we talked about it at the beginning of the season, where if you have guys who are looking to have a big senior season next year and maybe be draft eligible because ISU's draft stock is rising as a school, if you've got guys like that and they get hurt in the spring season, they're not going to have a senior season.
Yeah.
And so that's one of the big things that is so concerning. And I don't understand why, if they're having these reservations, they would have this season.
That's a loaded question. And granted, I don't know much on the inside, but if you look at, there's a lot that goes into it. One, the fact that they were willing to go, they would have had, if they didn't play at all this year, they would have gone a full school year without football, over a full calendar year. And yeah, from a football standpoint, that's horrible. But you also have to think about it from the point of athletics. You know, the fact that is a lot of lost revenue there. And I'm not saying that's what happened with Illinois State, that athletics was pressuring them to have a season because of money, but I'm sure that was a factor that went into it, that they at least wanted them to give it a try this season, because think about all the money that they'd be leaving on the table or would be losing, and that could possibly result in them cutting other sports programs if they didn't even give football a try. So I think it might not have been all on Coach Spack. I think he was probably being told he had to give this season a try. And I think, Joe, that does speak a lot, how he did talk to other coaches, did his research before doing this. And so you were at the press conference on Monday. Let's hear a little bit about his thoughts on the cancellation of the program.
Yeah, here's his opening statement right here.
It was really a brutal decision to have to make. I was told the best decisions are sometimes the hardest ones, and this was definitely that. I couldn't watch this any longer. I thought it would be very irresponsible. I'm responsible for the health and safety of our players, and in one particular position group, the defensive line was really hit hard by this, and it's the most physical part of the game. You know, we lost some guys, you know, some seniors that didn't come back and play for whatever reasons, and it just became really tough.
That was Illinois State head football coach Brock Spack. And here in that press conference, because I'll admit, honestly, when I first heard about the decision, I thought it's because they're 1-3. Spack's hedging his bets, getting out on a losing season. But you heard, I saw your package for TV 10, Joe, where you saw the emotion in him in that press conference and the fact that he said he talked to these players' families. I think, honestly, you could see he had the best interests of his players in mind. And I think it came to the point where he couldn't see his guys go through this anymore, that he had to. He was helping them out long-term. Maybe they resent him a little bit for it right now, but I think he was doing what was best for them long-term.
And it was mostly their defensive line. Like, they were literally at, like, no depth on the defensive line. They had about four guys that play about three spots. So they had a rotation of about one person on each spot. They just had a bunch of injuries go down. And in the press conference, they were talking about how they just can't keep on going through this with these type of injuries. And in other positions, you can maybe put a wide receiver at cornerback or a safety at cornerback, but you can't really put someone on the defensive line. That's kind of like the offensive line. You can't.
Yeah,
you can't replace that. Just their body size.
And Joe, you're a resident football guy. Mm-hmm. So at playing a former high school star. So tell us a little bit about what's the not recovery process, but the spring season is a time for training too, where you're building your body towards next season, because the season is a grind. So I get what he was saying for them to have had to go through that whole, you know, not get much of a recovery period going into next season. I see where it wouldn't be safe to the players. But just tell us about, in your football days, what was the off season? How necessary was that, getting that break from football?
Oh, you definitely need that break. And in that break, it's not really, you're not doing anything. It's mostly just lifting weights.
Right.
And so Coach Speck was saying that now they're taking this week off right now, and then next week they're going to be lifting weights till about that finals week, end of April, early May. Then once that happens, they're back to like kind of a summer camp. But they had to prepare for the fall like it was a normal camp, and then they had to prepare for the spring like it was a normal season. So they were preparing for, like, almost, if you think about it, three seasons in about, like, a year and a half.
And so how intense granted, you didn't do it at the Division I level, but how intense are those camps? Because I imagine those have got to be tough, too.
They're tough camps, and even at the high school level, it's 2-a-days, but in college, it can be even 3 times a day. And it's a grind, and they all have to do that on top of playing or going to school.
And that it begs the question again, these are all problems you could have foreseen. Like, that is not something that's
unique. If we could see these problems coming, you'd think somebody in athletics could see it coming.
So that's my whole point, is why would you go ahead with the season?
Money.
I understand that it's money, but if you're genuinely concerned about the player safety, right? Like, that was the big motive of the entire press conference, was they're concerned about player safety, and that's why they didn't want to go on with the season. You should have been able to see that coming before the season started, and you lost 10 guys to injury, and you're like, oh, well, maybe this wasn't a good idea.
And so, as we're talking about this, Coach Speck was talking about how he was looking towards next season, and here's a little quick soundbite about that he said in the press conference on Monday afternoon.
What kids don't understand is, when you're going through this, you're focusing just on the here and now. And I'm focusing on not now, but just in the fall, in the summer and the fall. Summer training, and then doing this again with 11 games, 12. You know, we played 15 games twice during my career here as a head coach. We had 15-game seasons. And, you know, the last season we played 15, and we won 10 of them. But that's a long, long season they got coming up. And to think these kids are going to be able to do this and go another month of this, or another 4 weeks, 4 weeks this month of this, and think there's not going to be ramifications, you know, you're not going to feel this in October or November, you know, they weren't thinking like that. I had to protect themselves from themselves.
I thought that was a really good point what Coach Speck said about the 15-game season, because if you included the 8-game season they would have played now and say they went on a run, played 15 games, that's 23 games they would have played in less than a calendar year. Like, they don't even really do that in the NFL, or that's double a Division I college season. So I definitely agree that you see where he was looking out for the best players, and that this would have been such a grind. And I don't know if I should give the Valley credit for trying to get their season out, because let's be honest, when the games were on, like when they were starting, we were having fun. I thought spring football was the coolest thing, but then now, thinking about it from a human standpoint as opposed to a fan, I see where it was wrong.
And a risk that you run when something like this happens is guys being disenfranchised with the program, and that's what we're seeing a lot of, as we're seeing really high caliber players leave the organization. Charles Woods a couple days ago, one of the best players in the Redbirds secondary, entered the transfer portal, and he was out there playing when I called the game with Blake the other Saturday. And Taylor Grimes just today, wide receiver 2 for the squad, he's gone now. So it's these are players who, for whatever reason, and I'd love to know more about their reasoning, they just feel like Illinois State is no longer the best fit for them.
Right, and now they're up to 4 players because safety Trenton Hatfield transferred and quarterback Jack Baltz, who I've been leading the hype train for him on this show for the past 2 semesters.
I remember before the season you were saying, he still got a chance.
Well, because, dude, we saw him play at Lincoln Way East in high school. He was sick then, I thought he was going to take that over.
I mean, a lot of that's what happens, though. The kids in high school are the best players on the team. And then,
but he just couldn't hack it here, I guess. But still, so it's we're seeing this mass exodus from the program. Some players they were really going to be counted on in the fall. So I wonder if this was some these guys were going to be transferring all along. Like it didn't have anything to do, you know, when with the team opting out. Like, but this is just when the season ended. So now this is as soon as they could enter the transfer portal. But it is kind of suspicious to see 4 guys immediately enter the portal like this.
Yeah, in the press conference, Spack was saying that he had support from the players. No one went up to him and opposed it.
Yeah.
And no player families went up.
Families too.
No one opposed it. That was a really good gesture. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I'm sure there probably is some parents that didn't speak up or whatever about it because they're disappointed. But you got to be happy that their head coach, who they gave their son to pretty much to go to college for their first time away from home, they gave him and they're looking out for their player's safety and health. So I think that the parents got to be really happy that they heard that from Coach Spack.
And it's very comparable, this situation, to what we're seeing with the basketball team, the men's basketball team, and how a lot of players are transferring out of there. Mm-hmm. And our suspicions, at least on the show, is the lack of success and the coaching staff, and there's a lot of lack of success on the football team right now. 1-3 after one of the most successful seasons in program history, and we lost James Robinson, but he's not the entire 22-man roster.
I feel like you're comparing apples to oranges there, because you look at the coaching staff, like, people love Coach Spack. Like, he's regarded as one of the best coaches at this level, so I don't think they're leaving because of him. Like, I think if you look at the cases of Woods and Grimes, I think they might be trying to take that next leap up. And then Baltz might have seen the writing on the wall that he's not going to be the quarterback long term. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what Hatfield's case was, but so I don't think it's the same as the
basketball. I'm not trying to say that Dan Muller and Brock Spack occupy the same space at ISU, but I'm just saying there could be a little bit of frustration,
right?
Especially because, like you said, Brock Spack is regarded as one of the best coaches in the FCS.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe the lack of organization from the program is a little disconcerting to some of these players, but like you said, Charles Woods and Taylor Grimes, they're good enough to be, especially Charles Woods, he's good enough to be playing at a Power 5 school.
Oh, yeah.
And getting significant time. So, he's ready to take that next step. So
it's just been such a weird year, though, too. It's like they go over a year without playing football, and they got players not returning for the spring season, like Christian Uphoff and Brady Davis and a couple other players, or even transferring out before the season, too. It's like they lose so many players.
Yeah, they're still
been competitive in their games.
Like, it wasn't like they were getting blown out in their games either. Like, they should have won that South Dakota game.
Oh, yeah.
They played North Dakota State tough.
Very well, yeah.
And even Northern Iowa.
They played
tough. So these weren't, blowout losses. It wasn't like they lost 35-7 like they did when the Bison came here last year. They were playing competitive. They just couldn't get those wins. But I think it could have been the same thing. If they were 3-1 and they had all these injuries, they probably still would have opted out. Originally, I thought it was because of the record, but I still think it's because of the safety.
Yeah, I agree with that, because when you really have about 5 people for those spots on the defensive line, it's like you can't really do anything about it. It's like he was saying he was scared. He knew it had to be over once Jude Okoro and another player went down on the same play.
Yeah.
It's like, man, we got to stop this. That's what he said in the press conference. He's like, we have to stop this
now. And, reinforcements are coming. They got a new defensive lineman transferred in from Minnesota. They have Micah Jones, a receiver, transferred from Notre Dame. So they got some high-profile additions coming to this team in the fall. So maybe the coaching staff knew that they're going to – because they had a few players that opted out of the spring season are going to play in the fall. So I think they were just counting – like, realized we could have a readjusted roster in the fall, just come back better then, focus on that, because right now it's just not safe for the players.
They do a good job getting transfers back, too.
And yeah.
Another one that could have played this year but got injured during the spring season was Mitch Lewis, a tight end. He came in from Miami, Ohio. So, and he's going to be out now for this spring season, now that they're out, and next year's
that's
fall
tough.
Season. So... you just that's just another injury.
Oh,
and another quick fact about this, they're 36 guys short from the fall season compared to now what they had in about a span of about 7 months.
And you know what's heartbreaking is that Coach Smack was saying that if they, like, their fall 20 roster was the best team he's ever had as a coach, and we never got to see that team on the field. That's with Romeo McKnight, with Devin Taylor, even with Brady Davis, Jeff Proctor, all those guys that are no longer with the team. That would have been something truly special to see. But, unfortunately, that never came to be, and we'll just have to wonder what if. And we're going to take a short break here. When we come back, we're going to have an interview with Redbird softball outfielder Kaylee Cheval. So don't go anywhere. You're listening to The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.
This is Illinois State infielder Owen Miller, and you're listening to The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
Leo Stauder, Joey Dwyer, and Joe Kennedy back on The Red Zone. As I mentioned, we're going to have an interview with Redbird softball outfielder Kaylee Cheval real quick, but the team is coming off a huge 6-0 win last night. It was their home opener, and Joey and Joe were both there. So
guys, those were there. The Joes were there.
The Joes were there. I didn't get an invite, apparently. I guess your name had to be Joe. But tell me, how was it to be back at Marion Kinnear Stadium?
It was absolutely electric. And I love I've been using the verb or the adjective electric for everything since March Madness started. But this was genuinely awesome to be at. I love the softball atmosphere here at ISU, and the team is so good this year.
Yeah.
They're 16
really
and
good.
4 right now. 3-0 in conference, and they are just really, really good. Morgan Day is one of the best pitchers in the Valley, if not the best.
And Mac Leonard.
And Mac Leonard, who...
Mac
Leonard didn't pitch last night, but Mac Leonard, and I talk about it a little bit in the interview that we'll get to in a second, Mac Leonard hit a ball, and it was the quickest no-doubter I've ever seen. Like, I was calling the game with Andrew Evola last night, and Mac Leonard makes contact, and before I could say anything, Andrew goes, "It's gone." Because I swear to God, before I could even turn my head, it was already over right center.
Jeez.
And it was just an absolute blast. And so this team is just playing on all cylinders. The defense is great.
They're fun to watch.
And
they have some
great freshmen, too, who have really come on and made an immediate impact. Like,
sophomores who really didn't play much, too.
Exactly, and they were second in the AP poll coming into the season, only behind Southern, and oh my goodness, if they are not first on whatever preseason poll or mid-season poll, because this team is just so talented.
Yeah.
And they're off to their best start since all of our parents were at Illinois State together in the 80s, unknowingly. But let's quit teasing this interview and get to the interview with Kaylee Cheval.
The Redbird softball team is coming in with a 16-4 record. They're off to a red hot start. Kaylee, just to start things off, how has this start been? What's been going right for your team?
Well, this start has actually been super fun and super exciting because this has actually been, according to Twitter and all the posts, the best start since 1988. And the team chemistry is great, and everything's working offensively and defensively for us.
And can you talk a little about that team chemistry you guys have this year? Last year, you started off the season 12-11, but this year, like you said, you're off to such a great start.
Well, from practice, since we're not really allowed to see each other outside of practice because of, like, COVID and contact tracing, we really try to bond throughout practice together and really try to get to know each other through the time we're able to have on and off the field.
And what was it like when you guys traveled down to Florida earlier in this non-conference schedule? You guys played six games in 3 days, but I'm sure the weather was nice. So what was your experience down there?
It was super fun being able to be in warm weather and getting back on the field as a team. And playing so many games in such little time can be tiring, but being together with such like a determined team and with such skilled players who are always positive and ready to go, it makes those long days easy.
And with that non-conference schedule being a grind, facing some very good teams like Clemson and Kentucky, how did that prepare you to start your Valley schedule now?
Well, when you play such high Power 5 schools, going into playing conference play really helps you prepare because you're seeing such good pitching and facing really high defensive players. So it helps you get into that mode to go into conference play.
After being named the Pitcher of the Week last week, Mac Leonard, she put on a great offensive performance last night. Can you just talk about the type of player she is for your team and how much she means to you guys?
She's really good in the leadoff spot for us to get things going offensively and defensively on the mound for us. She's definitely a key pitcher to help back us up throughout the games and to have a strong defensive showing.
Taking a look at your performance this season individually, you're coming in with somewhere around a .350 batting average after last night. You've been hitting the ball very, very well. Is there anything that's changed for you this season?
Well, with COVID obviously cutting our season short, last year I was able to work even harder and have more time to prepare myself for this upcoming season. So I was able to use that to my advantage, and I'm able to see the ball better, considering now I have at least a little more experience compared to my freshman year.
And what is your routine like when you step up to the plate? Because I know like a lot of baseball and softball players, they've got like tap in the plate or they'll tug on the sleeve or something. Do you have any like weird superstitions that you do when you get up to the plate? You're like, all right, now I'm going to hit the hell out of the ball because I did this, you know?
When I get into the box, I like to clear the dirt because I like to have a nice, flat, even surface. So when I get in there, I move the dirt around, and then I have to dig my back foot in as far as I can so I know I have like a good footing before the pitch comes in.
You were talking about how you were spending time over quarantine. What specific drills were you doing, and what were you looking to improve on? Did you change your swing maybe a little bit or change things up defensively?
I was really focusing on my offensive game, looking at like the outside pitch and making sure mechanically my swing was sharp and really spot on in order to come into this season as motivated and ready to go as I can be.
So talking about getting yourself motivated, how was it trying to prepare yourself for a full college season last year when in your first season you didn't even get the chance to experience a home game at Illinois State?
Well, that's really interesting because coming into our first home game, it's so different when you play. Freshman year, we played maybe a handful of fall games home, but like it's completely different going into spring because that's something my class hasn't experienced at all. And so you really have to focus in and focus on what's in front of you, the task at hand, because seeing a bunch of family members and fans around you sometimes can be nerve-wracking.
And so you were talking earlier, you were talking about this team chemistry that you guys have, and that's what's attributed to the team having so much success. Do you guys, like, and I don't even know if athletes, like, look at this stuff or if this is just all right over your head, but, like, do you take a little, like, chip on your shoulder when you get ranked second in the preseason poll for the Missouri Valley Conference and then you come out to this incredibly hot start? Is there something in you that's like, I'm going to prove these guys wrong? We are so much better than Southern Illinois. Like, is there anything in your head that's working like that? Or does the team talk about that at all?
Oh, absolutely. We're ready to go. And we, from last year, having such a hot start, we're bringing that momentum into this season. So we're even more excited for conference play, and we definitely see ourselves being number one.
When you first arrived to ISU, what person, either player, staff, or even not a player on the team, took under their wing and showed you the guidance throughout your college life?
Definitely our upperclassmen really helped us, guide us through everything that's going on to understand, like, the coach's tendencies and what to do versus what not to do, since they're very much more experienced with everything. Since coming in freshman year, we weren't able to spend enough time with the coaches, so that the upperclassmen really are able to give us pointers.
And talking about some of your other teammates, who would you say is one player on the team that is one of the most underrated players on the team?
I would definitely say Jaden Standish, who played third base last night for us. She's doing phenomenal as an incoming player, as a freshman, and also Maddie Bilak, who played second for us. And because both of them, off the field, they put in a ton of work and are just really dedicated players to the game and know a lot about softball.
And Jaden Standish had an absolute ripper up the middle last night. Joe and I were both at the game. And you guys were absolutely clobbering the ball. Everybody on your team was just hitting the hell out of it. Is there something that you guys are doing with a hitting coach or with any of your coaches that makes it so you guys are seeing the ball better this year or you're hitting better? Anything that you guys changed in the off season?
We just have now even more girls coming in every day to work offensively together in pairs or with our hitting coach to make our offense even easier once it's game time.
And so you were talking a little bit about earlier how after practices and games, you really aren't going out. How is life outside of just softball right now? Practices and games, you get to see family or friends or not really?
When we were in preseason, we weren't allowed to see family outside of like when they come to our games. So basically it's just been soft practice, games. Either you go back to your hotel after preseason or you come back to your apartment or wherever you're living on campus and you just do homework. There's not much life outside of softball right now.
I feel like there's not a whole lot of life outside of anything for people right now, but I can't imagine having all of your practices and just trying to make time for homework, all that other stuff. So more power to you as you go through your college career. And as you do all of these things, is there anybody, whether a softball player that you looked up to or just anyone in your life who really inspired you to take this collegiate athlete path and give it your all in both school and the field?
Definitely my dad for me personally, because he was my coach throughout my entire softball career until now. And he played college baseball as well at the Division I level. So he's been a great role model and mentor for me to help guide me through my career. And he always wants the best for me.
And did you ever, I'm just speaking from personal experience, but did you ever get flack from your teammates for being a coach's kid? Because my dad was my baseball coach, and I got all the kids on the team are like, the only reason you're starting first base is because you're the coach's kid. You're bad. And maybe I was, but to my credit, I don't think I was that bad. Did you ever experience any flack for being coach's kid?
Sometimes, there will always be teammates who think that, but like, you just have to show them, like, skill wise and on the field, why you belong in the position you do.
And I feel like now that you're playing D1 softball, nobody can really be like, oh, it's just because she's the coach's kid.
Yeah. And what's some one piece of advice you would want to give to younger girls that are hoping to play softball at the Division I level?
I think it is very possible if you believe in yourself, and there is always a school for everyone out there. You just have to keep working and keep your eyes open for any school.
So there's a lot going on right now in the NCAA and gender inequality, especially during March Madness that's been happening. Do you think that ISU has done a good job promoting and funding softball and other women's sports here at ISU?
I think so. Our staff at ISU works really hard to help get our women's teams noticed. And I don't think there's been anything of the sort about like inequality versus women's sports and men's sports here.
Yeah, it seems like the new athletic director, Kyle Brennan, he's really doing a good job trying to speak to every athlete. Has he had a chance to come speak to you guys at all at softball?
Yeah, before we left for Indiana State for our first conference series, he was able to talk to us, and he was super excited to get to know all of us on the team.
Just to round it out, because we're running out of time, but this is just a question that I had, and I was even more curious after last night. So you guys always have the chance that you do in the dugout. Is that something that's, like, sacred to the team? Like, is that something you guys come up with, like, as a bonding exercise, or how does that work? Because I am always so fascinated by it, and I feel like being a batter and I have the entire dugout chanting at me, that'd be so in my head, I would not be able to hit at all.
Well, when you're up to bat, I personally can't really hear anyone that's, like, cheering, but those cheers, I think, just get passed down throughout the years. So, like, we've had the – I don't know how they came about, but they've just always been passed down throughout the years. And, like, once the class that graduates, then the next class will step up and make sure everyone knows what's going on cheering-wise.
So it's – okay, so it's like a heritage thing.
Yeah.
And is it like a competition against the other team when you're, like, chanting against them? It kind of seemed like that last night. Like,
oh, yeah, sometimes you try to see which dugout's the loudest.
And I can only imagine it's easier to do that when you're up 6-0 than opposed to when you're down 6-0. I feel like the team who's winning has a little bit of an advantage there.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, thank you so much for waking up so early. I mean, 10 o'clock's probably not that early for you, but thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much to Kaylee Chevelle for coming on the show to talk about what an amazing season it's been so far for Redbird softball. And as Joey mentioned, you got to hear our morning voices because we got up bright and early at 10 a.m. to do that interview, which really isn't all that early. But stick around because next when we come on, we're going to have News and Sports Operations Director Maritza Navarro-Lopez for a very special topic. You're listening to The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.
This is Steph Jankowicz from Redbird Volleyball, and you're listening to The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
Welcome back. Leo Stauder, Joey Dwyer, and Joe Kennedy on The Red Zone. We're now joined by our boss, News and Sports Operations Director, Maritza Navarro-Lopez. First time she's been on the show for quite some time, so this is a special occasion.
You've been on before?
Yeah, I think it's been like a year at this point since I've been on. Last time I was on, we had a whole new different set. Joey's the only person who ever came back that I've been around since then. It was me, Joey, Scotty, and Hector, I believe.
Wow, so it's been a minute then.
Yeah, back.
But Maritza, you brought a very important topic to discuss with us, something that's been in the forefront of the headlines in the sports world, not really something that's been going on in the court, but something on how the NCAA has been mistreating a certain population of their athletes. Want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so on social media, on TikTok a few weeks, I could think of a week, if not less than that, there was a few NCAA women's basketball players from the tournament that had posted the difference in the weight rooms between the men's tournament weight room along with the women's tournament weight room, and the men's had it decked out. There were squat racks, there were just benches, there was just a ton of things for them to use. And for women, well, they only had a yoga mat and a few, maybe 5 to 10, maybe the most I saw was 50 pounds of what are those cones of the little
like the dumbbells?
The dumbbells, yeah. And to think that that's the only thing that women athletes need in college is kind of absolutely absurd. So they posted some videos about it, and it just went viral because they're college athletes in a tournament for NCAA. I mean, it's seriously unacceptable.
And I think the first thing to tackle about this topic was the social media backlash.
Yeah.
Because Sedona Prince, my apologies, a basketball player for Oregon, she was the first one to kind of post it on TikTok and was like, this is kind of messed up. Like, we don't have any equipment. And within days, the NCAA was taking so much flack for it, and all these different companies, Dick's and Orange Fitness, and all these companies were like, we will send you things to San Antonio, which was just an awful look for the NCAA and such bad press for them because all these companies were doing the job that they should have been doing.
And what rubbed me probably the most about that was the fact that they were able to do it within days. So it shows that that was something they could have done without the social media backlash. This was something they were capable of doing but chose not to, which I think is the worst. Because when you're talking about like a corrupt organization, like you got like the IOC, the NCAA is the worst. So this is them just, they play favorites. They only care about the sports that make them money. And they chose to prioritize the men's tournament over the women's tournament. We saw some players posted the side-by-sides of the merch that they gave to the men's athletes. Mm-hmm. It was tons of stuff. They had toiletries, different shirts with the year and Indianapolis on it. And the women's got the generic NCAA women's tournament stuff that like we have up in our newsroom. And like you see like at the Fiesta Bowl this year where they gave each player that competed in it PS5.
Yeah.
Like they so favor the sports that make the money and then can't do what's right for their other sports. It's just so unfair.
I will say The NCAA says they are evaluating current and previous resource allocations for each championship to have a clear understanding of cost, spend, and revenue, as if they're not a multi-million dollar...
Big round of applause for the NCAA, everybody.
Non-profit, non-profit, big air quotes, business, who should know what their cost, spend, and revenue already are. So this is just like the most blatant backpedal I've ever seen.
And to fight back against all this, they just hired a law firm, apparently, according to ESPN, Kaplan, Hecker, and Fink from New York. And so they've had experience with Title IX and gender equity issues. I'm not quite sure what the law firm they're fighting exactly, but they've done this before. Yeah, they've done this before, so it's nothing new. And another thing I want to talk about is how photography at the men's tournaments, they had over 200 photos available during the first round, but for the women's, they have no photography until the Sweet 16, saying that it has to do with money issues. A billion-dollar organization that does not give anything back to
its
athletes.
So there's just no proof that these games in the first two rounds happened?
Yeah, the only picture they have is this picture of the court. I'll show you guys here, but it's just a picture of the middle court logo. This is the one picture.
You could literally say that's any game in the tournament. Though.
Yeah,
that's
I don't think it's a game. I think it might be a practice. No, it's a game, but I don't. It isn't all right to have that.
No, and even with the media, that goes back to, I think you all saw that tweet from the reporter from the Loyola Phoenix, how that after the Loyola Illinois game, that she had her hand raised in the entire press conference, but they wouldn't pick on a student media member. So that's just. The NCAA just keeps dropping the ball with even their media representation, too.
And even then, it also even comes down to the type of food that they were offered. I don't know if you guys saw those pictures either, but the women's were offered this, like, weird prepackaged, probably frozen food that they didn't even know what it was. And the men's literally had buffet-style pastas, like, just tins of food for them, which is, I can't even imagine feeding them differently. Like, they're athletes. It's such a joke.
And the most mind-boggling thing that I read was not only was the food different, but the women's tournament had cheaper COVID test alternatives, so it wasn't even as safe.
No.
What?
Like, I swear to God, the NCAA women's tournament literally had less accurate COVID tests administered every day than the men's tournament. It still does, and it's just, it's absolutely mind-boggling, and this is why Congress, a bunch of members of Congress, have stepped in and taken some action, writing an open letter to the NCAA, which they expect a response for in like the next week or so, saying that the NCAA needs to adhere to the spirit of Title IX. But like we were talking about before the show, and the NCAA isn't actually required to follow Title IX,
which seems like they're exactly what Title IX was created for. Mm-hmm. Like, so if they don't even have to follow it, what, that just doesn't make any sense.
It seems like just no one outside of the NCAA supports the actions that they've done, especially over the past couple of 5 years. And everyone's calling for these athletes to be paid.
Cause we've talked, and it goes back to what we talked about with Cameron Kelly this year, and even last semester, where the NCAA only cares about the money sports. That's, and we just saw it in track and field, where they reduced the size of the national qualifiers from 48 to 32. Okay, we're going to talk about March Madness. You see how many Cinderella teams like legitimately have a chance of winning the title, or can go all the way, like a 16 seed can beat a 1 seed. That's the same in track and field. If you're seeded 48th, you've got just as much shot as somebody seeded first. So they really only care about the sports that make the money, and it's just sickening.
It's sad because we see all these stories on social media where these people were seeded 48th and then they place in the top 10 or the top 20, and it's just disappointing to think that they just want to scrap that all together for going from 48 to 32. That's a large jump. It's just so sad because so many people need that. So many schools need that. I mean, when we had Jack Anstey go off and run for, was it the NCAA, when he ran this crazy mile, or even just having someone like James Robinson have an opportunity in the NFL, it's crazy to think that they would seed us so poorly that these people wouldn't even have these opportunities to do something like this in something like track and field.
And that all comes back to the fact that the NCAA is all about that paper, right? They put the most effort into where the money goes, but that raises this whole other issue. And Sabrina Ionescu, who played for Oregon last year on the New York Liberty Now, she spoke out about it as well, because women's basketball, not only in the college sphere, but also professionally, is gaining a lot more traction.
Yeah.
And so for them to not have adequate facilities really puts them at a disadvantage when it comes time to play their best basketball. And because there are a lot of athletes who are hoping to make a career out of the sport they play, even if those sports are not the highest grossing for the NCAA. So it is unfair to the athletes who are trying to make a living but can't showcase because they don't have an adequate weight room, or they're eating literal sludge that was served from a freezer to a microwave to their plate.
I think so.
It's ridiculous.
And the thing with the weight room, too, that confuses me, I'm reading it here from NBC News. So there were no dumbbells above 30 pounds. They'll get those in the Sweet 16. So you literally have to go further in the tournament to get better. Is that an incentive? Like, that makes no sense.
Why do I have to wait to the Sweet 16? I just don't get it. Because they say that these things were going to come in the Sweet 16. Like they said, I think they said they would have the weight room in the Sweet 16. They said they would have photography in the Sweet 16. And now,
like, why wait?
You just said, like, yeah, it just doesn't make sense at all.
If you're going to fund it, just fund it from the beginning. Yeah. Why are you going to wait until, I don't
know. And a lot of excuses also are due to COVID cuts, but I mean, like.
But what's the difference between having a weight room for 64 teams and a weight room for 16 teams as far as COVID is concerned, if you're still cleaning, like you still have multiple teams using that weight room.
And I think they have designated times. I think you have to reserve a time for you to come in, so it won't be big enough for all 64 to be there at once, so that doesn't even make sense when you think about it that way either.
It doesn't make sense, like, thinking about it logically. You know, if what the NCAA is saying does not match up with their actions logically. So it's really frustrating for a myriad of different reasons.
Yeah.
And I just am, I'm at a loss for words of what the NCAA can do moving forward to eliminate some of these concerns, because it really feels like over the past 5 years, like you were saying, Joe, they just really do not care about sports that aren't men's basketball or football.
And when we had Cammy on back at the start of semester, we talked about that. You know, if you get these discussions started, that these athletes now are using their voices to spur these changes, and if it takes bullying the NCAA to get fair treatment, that's what we're going to have to do. Because, you know, you see all the support that's coming behind that. Even I think I saw some of the WNBA athletes funded
hashtag not NCAA property.
To get money for the women's tournament. So now I think, I'm not saying this is good, but the fact that the athletes have taken their voices to be heard publicly, that's going to be what's inspiring some change, hopefully, that if everybody sees the NCAA for what it is, for how they're doing wrong by these athletes, that's where these discussions about getting changes are going to get started. So props to all these athletes for speaking up and trying to get what's right to happen. All right, I made everybody.
I was just digesting. Like you put a pin in it. I was just sitting here like, wow, that was a great point, Leo.
I think we could all agree though that we just do not like the NCAA.
No,
I
think
they do some nice things. Actually, the athletes do very nice things.
The athletes is what makes it's what it is.
The athletes, not the corporation.
Exactly.
It's who's doing the work. Who's actually doing it?
It's the athletes and whoever wrote the CBS March Madness song. That's who we love.
Cool, yeah.
That guy can stay. Everybody else in the NCAA can go.
And I guess it's hypocritical that we say, because when we come back, we're going to be talking about some March Madness, some upsets and brackets and whatnot. But we're going to take a quick break, so stick around. You're listening to Red Zone on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.
Hey, this is Dickie V, baby, and you're listening to the Red Zone, baby, only on 103.3 WZND.
We're back with more with some March Madness coverage here. Leo Sauter, Joey Dwyer, Joe Kennedy, and Maritza Navarro-Lopez. And for anybody keeping score at home, in our WZND Bracket Challenge, as far as the four people in this room, the standings are Maritza, closely followed by Joey, and then Joe, with me all the way at the bottom, but that's what we knew was going to happen. Let's be real here.
I will say,
at least you're not Eric Schweizer.
I'm not that far ahead of him, though. So.
You know, I also, to be fair, I also picked Texas in this bracket.
To win it all?
To win it all.
Oh,
but,
God.
But all my other picks have been pretty good. But Maritza was running away with it in the round of 64.
She's getting cocky,
like,
too.
Our group chat, oh my goodness. She was baking everybody. And then you got a little humbled by the round of 32.
You know, I wasn't ready for it. I didn't know what was going on there. I didn't expect any of those games to go the way that they did.
Mm-hmm. I don't think anyone did. But I think the biggest upset that we saw And this is going to be a little hard to talk about, so I'm going to use my somber voice for this. But a very heartbreaking match for our very own Joe Kennedy when the Illini fell to Loyola Chicago. Joe, walk me through your feelings.
I woke up that morning, and I was about the most happiest I've been in my entire life in so long. I woke up to the Illini for a chance to get back to the Sweet 16 for the first time in 15 years, 16 years. And right when the game started, it just didn't feel right. It just, something about it. And coming in that with Cameron Krutwig, I was saying before it was going to be a matchup of the century, and it kind of was. Krutwig dominated, but it was more of the role players on the team, as both Krutwig and Coburn had a pretty solid game. They battled it out in the paint, a guy from Jamaica versus a dude from Algonquin, and the Illini just didn't look themselves. They didn't make any adjustments. Brad Underwood really kind of just, he didn't want to change what he wanted to do. It seemed like he kept his game plan, and he just didn't seem to want to change it. And Porter Moser just out-coached him. Right at the start, Porter Moser was just running up and down the court as the offense and defense would go. And he was ecstatic. It was insane. He's an insane coach and awesome coach, players coach.
You talk about it, how he's so strict, like how he was so into it. He's so strict on the defense, and you saw that from the beginning, how that Loyola was like the first team to ever really have an answer for Kofi Coburn. So the defense was coming out flying early on. I think that confused the Illini early on. And then they didn't lead at all in the game. So I think they were just playing catch-up all game. You talk about the role players stepping up. I think it's fair to say that Loyola's sixth man and Brother Rice Chicago graduate Marquise Kennedy had 14 points off the bench. Had to throw that in there, helping topple the Fighting Illini there.
And but what, Joe?
Can't do it with these Brother
Ice. I know, Brother. Yeah, where'd their head coach go to high school?
Brother Ice's?
Loyola Chicago. He went to Naperville.
Did he really?
Yeah.
The man
former ISU guy, too.
Yeah, he's former ISU guy. Yeah, he was here. And the thing is, he was here and didn't have a great record, but he was only here for, what, 3 to 4 seasons on the... And you got to have time to build a roster. And so that's what Porter Moser did at Loyola Chicago. He was able to stay there for multiple seasons. And here at ISU, he didn't really get that much time to build his foundation.
No, and you talk about it, how he was able to build his foundation. I think it comes with just a strict defensive system. And I see how that could maybe turn people off at first, because now the popular trend in basketball, it always is offense. People want to see the high-flying offenses. But when, you know, there's the old adage that defense wins championships. Mm-hmm. And you see that they were able just to come down with that strict baseline philosophy that then turned into offense, because they were just limiting the threats from Illinois. And that's, you know, something maybe we're going to have to see more teams adapt going forward.
And I do, before we move on from some of these upsets we saw in the round of 32 and the round of 64, I want to give major props to Joe Kennedy, because you called Ohio.
Yeah.
Joe was talking huge about Ohio, the 13 seed. They beat Virginia, and I picked them because of you.
Okay.
And they won. So I just wanted to thank you here to maybe...
And I did talk about Max Asmus from Oral Roberts, too, when we were talking about the selection. Me and Marcel were talking about that, too, my roommate, who was on the show last week. But a lot of us did have some nice picks, but a lot of us also just had some really, really bad picks as well. So that's March, baby. That's what happened.
None of us are smart when it's March.
And bad picks are the name of the game, right? You can't ever pick well. But do you guys want to try to pick well again?
As a group, I think we got some smart people in this group.
We've got Maritza, who was like in, after day one, you were what, like 95th percentile or something like that?
I was doing great. I think it was because of my Oral Roberts pick. I picked them twice. I picked them against Ohio and Florida.
And they won both of
them.
What is that?
I don't know. The vibes were immaculate, and I just knew that I just had to pick them. I don't know why. I just felt the intuition was there.
Yeah.
That's what I bring to the table.
So we've got the Sweet 16, and ESPN is giving us this beautiful opportunity for the tournament second chance.
Okay.
So on the show right now, live for the audience, we're going to give you every single game perfectly right now.
Mm-hmm.
So do you guys want to start it off?
Yeah, top left to top left, or to bottom left to bottom right. All right.
So
West region,
Gonzaga, Creighton. What are you guys feeling?
I mean, Gonzaga, there's no way they lose this game. Creighton has been they've been a great team this year. Marcus Zagorowski and Mooney, they're big center, but Gonzaga is just way too dominant. They're one of the best defensive team Mark Few's had.
And to be fair, in the pick six, your personal rule is don't pick against Gonzaga.
Don't ever pick against Gonzaga. And looking at their schedule, they're playing, after Creighton, they're going to be either playing two West Coast teams to get to the Final Four, so they're used to those West Coast fools, and they'll make it easily, I think, to the Final Four.
Okay, so those West Coast fools, USC and Oregon, who are we picking?
Well, I'm going to go with Oregon out of the Conference of Champions.
No.
Really, no?
I see.
I like that. I wasn't blown away by USC when I saw them.
I don't know. Their length is something, though, that Gonzaga has never seen.
Okay.
But they do got to get past Oregon.
They
got to
get past Oregon first, though.
Which they have before. But for if they go up against Gonzaga, Gonzaga hasn't really played a team like that with length. They did play BYU,
true.
Had Matt Harms, who's like 7'3", but the entire USC lineup is like over 6'5", and that's just something different that a lot of not a teams
All right.
get
So should
to
we
experience.
Go with the Trojans then?
So I think, Mirza, what do you think?
Yeah.
Joey and I are going with the Trojans.
Mirza, you can be our tiebreaker right here.
I'll go with the Trojans too.
Okay, there we go. I like that. Okay, so now in the East, we've got Michigan, Florida State, and what I'll say is Carter Getty came on, one of our staffers came on the show like third week of the semester and said that Florida State always plays down to their opponents, and that has stuck in my mind.
Yeah,
and
that really did me dirty.
I have no faith in Florida State, but Michigan is missing Isaiah Livers, and I have no idea who to pick in this game.
I still think Michigan is going to come off with the W. They played very well in their first two games, I think, and they've played well with Austin Davis and Hunter Dickinson. They're two centers, and I think they're going to be able to take over against Florida State, who's a good defensive team and shooting team, but we've seen that good shooting teams really can't really do well in March in some games. If you don't shoot the ball well, you're out.
It's the Carter-Getty paradox.
I just don't trust Florida State because of Carter, so I'm going to go with the Wolverines here, too.
All right,
and
perfect.
That's our last Big Ten team left, too.
Yeah.
You say ours. I think you mean yours.
We're Valley guys.
We're Big Valley guys.
I mean, all right.
The Valley runs deep.
I'm a Valley guy, 100%.
All right, so UCLA, Alabama, rounding out the East for the Sweet 16. I think this one's pretty obvious, but I want to run it past you three first.
Yeah, I think Alabama is going to win that one.
Me too.
Easily.
Yeah, Alabama. UCLA, good run, the 11th seed.
It was fun.
They had struggle against Michigan State and then against BYU, and yeah, so I think they're going to be able to, though, win this game.
All right, so moving to the south, we're on the right side of the bracket now. Baylor, Villanova.
Ooh. Nova.
Ooh. And you see, I kind of agree. I have been sleeping on Baylor. And they have looked better in the tournament than they did in the regular season. But I don't know, Villanova has really showed up in this tournament.
I also like Villanova here. I think they're one of those schools that does a good job developing players over 4 years, teaches them to play in March. I think they could get something going here against the one seed.
They won a few years ago, didn't they?
Yeah.
That's just why.
I don't know.
They're in my mind.
The matchups they've kind of had. They've had the Winthrop matchup, which was a big pick.
I like Winthrop.
I had them too. But then they also played Northern Texas, a 13 seed in the second round. And they're without their two best players right now. So I don't know. They're going up against one of the best teams in the country. And they've had a relatively easy way to get there. But I can see it happening. But I don't think
it looks like we're forcing Joe into this Villanova.
I mean, I don't care. You guys out pick me, so I guess we're doing Villanova.
Okay, so this game, I probably don't even have to ask because I know which one we're picking. Arkansas, Oral Roberts.
So who did we pick, Baylor or
Villanova?
Villanova. Villanova, okay.
Okay.
Putting it down.
Arkansas, Oral Roberts. We have to, right?
Yeah, we have to.
We have to.
Team of Destiny.
We have to. Okay.
Destiny, we should have saw this coming, too. The leading scorer, best free throw shooting team in the NCAA. Like, how could you not see this? I mean, obviously, it's a 15 seed, but, like, all the signs were kind of there, and Max Esmus was a second-round pick at the time in the mock draft, so now he's even elevated to potential first-round late or early second-round. But so we got
to
go with Oral Roberts.
And that is the beautiful thing about March.
It's March, baby. Anything can happen.
And
come
so now,
on,
my
baby.
my favorite of the four Sweet 16s right now, the Midwest, where we've got an 8, a 12, an 11,
insane.
And a 2. So we'll go 8 and 12 first. Loyola, Chicago, and Oregon State.
Valley runs deep.
Easy.
Ramblers.
Loyola, they're really good. And they came in as a top 10 KenPom team, underseeded. Same with Oregon. Same with a couple other teams where they really shouldn't have been where they were at. But they're there now. They beat the one seed. and they're going to beat Oregon State, I think.
Joe, do you pay for the KenPom subscription?
Oh, no, I just saw I see it all on Twitter. I don't pay for any of that stuff.
I was going to say, I wouldn't be surprised. You seem like a KenPom kind of guy.
I mean, Kennedy, KenPom, but
there you go.
I ain't on that.
So our last Sweet 16 game before we move to the Elite Eight, we've got Syracuse Houston.
Ooh.
Buddy Boeheim shooting the lights out in this tournament so far. The 11 and the 2 seed. Let's send it to Stauder first.
Oh, why'd you do that?
Because you looked the most apprehensive to answer.
Oh boy, I mean,
I don't know. I don't like Syracuse. Like every year, it's like they're always the last team, one of the last teams get in, but they somehow make a run, maybe to the Sweet 16 or even the Elite Eight. Like it every year, they're on that stretch.
Right. I'm just looking at it here. So Houston averages, holds opponents to 57.9 points per game. I think maybe that's where they could have the advantage, but I don't, Syracuse is one of those teams where they're hot in the tournament, and I feel like that's hard to pick against. But I'm going to go with Houston here, but this is a tricky one.
All right, Joe?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Houston, too, as well.
All right, Mertz, are you on the Houston train?
I'm not.
Oh.
I don't feel
it. See, and here's I will agree with you, because Buddy Boeheim...
Coach's kid.
Unreal. He's the coach. We talked about it with Kaylee earlier. The coach's kids, they're good.
Well, some of them are.
Watch it.
And I don't know. I think Syracuse can. I think they can.
Are you going to flip?
Them. I mean, we're at 2-2 right now.
So we need somebody to flip. Joe, are you flipping?
I'm not.
I really don't want to, but I mean, I guess I could, because I think that Houston... They've had some struggle against some zone, and Syracuse is a good zone team, and they're just lighting up
going for Syracuse.
And I think, let's just do it. We got our Elite Eight.
Okay, speed run, Elite Eight, Gonzaga, USC.
Gonzaga, come on.
Zags, okay, perfect. Yeah. Speed, Michigan, Alabama, the only 1 and 2 seeds we have.
Roll Tide.
Bama.
Bama, yeah.
Okay,
I had them in my Final Four, so yeah.
Villanova, Oral Roberts.
Ooh. Okay, I think this is where the story ends. But, I mean, Villanova's story...
Our shining moment, Joe. Our shining moment.
I know, but I just don't... I think Baylor's going to win either way, so, I mean, whatever you guys think.
What do we think?
That was some shade.
What do you guys think? I would take Villanova, though, over this.
I
just because
too.
You can't. The story's over.
The story does come to an end at some point.
At some point, it has to.
It has to come to an end.
And it doesn't always end with the Nets coming down. All right, Loyola, Chicago, Syracuse.
Loyola.
The Valley runs deep.
Come on.
Loyola.
Second Final Four in 4 years.
Final Four, Gonzaga, Alabama.
Ooh.
Gonzaga, come on.
Zags, okay. Then Villanova, Loyola, Chicago.
Loyola, baby.
The Valley
Ramblers.
Run deep.
All
right, Natty Champ.
I think Loyola
Natty
could
champ.
Match up with these guys.
Natty Champ.
That? Come on, man.
No,
but Gonzaga.
We got 1 minute in the show. Are we picking Zags, Leo?
We that's
Zags.
Zags. But I think Loyola can definitely match up with these guys if they get there. So.
And we got to pick the final score for the tiebreaker, because we'll win like a new Kia or something.
83-81.
83-81 from Leo. Right. Maritza?
I don't know.
I like that. 86, maybe a little more scoring.
I'd say 89. Ooh, I don't know.
Let me throw this out. Maybe a little like 88-84 OT.
Perfect.
All right.
Drama.
That would be good.
And as much as we'd like to keep this going on all night, that is all the time we have. Guys, it's been a great show. We talked about the Illinois State football team's decision to opt out of the season. We had Redbird outfielder Kaylee Chevelle on to talk about their record-setting season. We had Maritza Navarro-Lopez on talking about the disparity between the genders in the NCAA. And then we rounded it out with some NCAA bracket talk. Contradicted ourselves a bit there, but whatever. That's another issue. But if you missed any part of tonight's show, you can catch it online on WZND.com, the podcast. Guys, it was a great show, and if you're as much as we'd like to stick around, we can't. But if you miss us in just 6 days and 23 hours, we will be back, and you're not going to want to miss it, because we're going to have more coverage from high school to the pros. For Joe Kennedy, Joey Dwyer, Mertz Navarro-Lopez, and Kaylee Schvell, I'm Leo Stauder. You've been listening to The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.
To hear this and other past episodes of The Red Zone again, download the Red Zone podcast online at WZND.com or on iTunes. And of course, tune into The Red Zone every Thursday at 6, right here on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.